Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, I'm Georgia and welcome back for another episode in my history series. But I suppose this one actually kind of sits at the intersection between true crime and history. It's not as much of a mystery, so I didn't want to include it in my mystery series, but it's definitely a fascinating crime. Today we're going to be talking about the Wendy's Finger Chili Scam. A woman found a human finger in her chili from a Wendy's restaurant, and the story that followed is as much of a roller coaster as you would expect. Also, as has been the case for my last few videos, if you hear banging and crashing and scratching in the background, my kitten is running wild, so just ignore her. So this case centres around a fast food chain called Wendy's. We don't really have Wendy's here in the UK. I think the first one in the UK literally opened up in my hometown in Reading in June of last year, so in 2021, and a couple more have opened up in England since then. I haven't eaten there yet, but from what I can gather, it's just your standard fast food restaurant along the same lines of McDonald's and Burger King. As of the end of 2017, Wendy's was the world's third largest hamburger fast food chain with 6,711 locations, probably much more than that now, the majority of which are based in North America, but it has been worldwide for many years. It seems to be popular pretty much everywhere except Europe, and I really wonder why that is. But we're talking a huge worldwide company, a company with plenty of money. It was the 22nd of March 2005 when 39-year-old Anna Ayala went into a Wendy's restaurant with her family on Montgomery Street in San Jose, California. Her brother-in-law had been the one to order the food for the family at the restaurant, and at approximately 7:39 p.m, Anna started eating the chili she had requested. However, she soon bites down on something unusual. When she looks down, she sees that she's just bitten into a partially cooked piece of human finger. 1.5 inches long, fingernail and all. As I'm pretty sure anyone would do in such a situation, Anna freaks out and gets the attention of the whole restaurant and the staff, who proved to be just as confused as her. The staff were pretty sure that they'd know if a co-worker had lost a finger in the kitchen, and after a quick ask around, it was clear that for sure, no one had lost a finger. Not knowing what was best to do in this unprecedented situation, the staff called the police, who after arriving advised that this wasn't a criminal case, it was a health and safety case, they needed to contact the health department. Regardless, according to the San Jose Police Department's statement of facts, at least one officer did document the events of that evening, taking a statement from Anna and her family and preserving the foreign object, the finger, as well as the rest of the chili. The staff had contacted higher management, who told them to keep the finger in the freezer until the police came to take it away. That evening, a San Jose police officer transported the finger to the Santa Clara County Coroner's Office for forensic analysis. Also, in that same statement of facts, it mentions that on the 31st of March, so 9 days after the incident, Anna's family members who were present at Wendy's that evening were interviewed in regards to the incident. Most of them said that they never actually saw the finger actually in Anna's mouth, but how often do you actually watch somebody's mouth as they eat? That would be weird. Her father-in-law stated that although he wasn't sitting with Anna at the time and was on a separate table sort of next to her, he did notice her spit something out of her mouth and back into the cup of chili. Her mother-in-law, who she was also there with, said something along a similar vein, and her brother-in-law said he saw the finger in the bottom of her chili bowl, but didn't see her spit it out or vomit at any point. It didn't take long for the franchise team that managed that particular restaurant to contact Wendy's corporate communications department, who immediately started preparing media statements in anticipation of this national media story they knew was likely to run. And oh boy, did this story run. By 10 p.m. that night, local news started reporting on it as an unconfirmed story, but it really wouldn't be long until the media frenzy would start. At 10 a.m. the next morning, the franchise owner and the operations team showed up on site at the restaurant to begin their own investigation and to assist the health department's inspection as well. Remember, it wasn't criminal at this point, it was just health and safety. Although I couldn't find it explicitly stated anywhere, I think we're safe to assume that the store was closed until the situation was resolved. They started by checking once again that all staff members had all 10 fingers and made sure that the standard preparation procedures were followed when making the chili the day before. The guy who made the chili was questioned intensely. That afternoon, the Santa Clara County Health Officer confirmed that the finger was indeed human tissue in case there was any doubt. And at this point, thanks to the media, most people believe that the finger had been cooked in the chili, and that included the health officer. So the health officer stated that there was minimal health risk to anyone who might have eaten the contaminated chili, because a lot of people had been to Wendy's that afternoon and got the chili, and they were concerned. The next day, a photograph of the finger was released to the media by the county health department, which fueled the quickly growing media frenzy surrounding this case. By this point, Anna finding a human finger in her chili had become nationwide news. The health department also said that Anna, who was referred to anonymously as just the victim at this point, was distraught and sickened by the incident, and she was working on how she wanted to advance, because of course this was a very obvious lawsuit from the very first moment. Wendy's also took this very seriously from the first moment. It's a pretty obvious health and safety problem, but everyone was baffled as to how it had been able to happen and how an employee losing a finger hadn't been reported. The only explanation was that this must have happened somewhere along the ingredient supply chain and there had been some kind of communication issue. But Wendy's were able to trace the chili ingredients back to seven different suppliers, all of whom denied that any employees had lost a finger. As proof, all of these different companies provide documentation showing that there have been no recent employee accidents of this nature. But also, you'd probably remember something like that. You'd remember an employee losing a finger and no one remembered anything. Wendy's crisis management team kicked into action to figure out how to respond to this growing situation in the media. They state publicly that the company are fully cooperating with the health department's investigation, as well as conducting their own internal investigation. The corporate security department hires their own private investigator to look into the case independently. And it doesn't take long for them to find out that Anna Ayala had a bit of a litigious history. She'd sued many companies before. According to court records, Anna had been involved in several legal battles in both California and her home state of Nevada. She may or may not have received a settlement many years beforehand from an El Pollo Loco restaurant in Las Vegas when her daughter got sick after eating there. Anna was also involved in a sexual harassment lawsuit in 1998 against La Overt Review newspaper incorporation, where she was seeking $500,000, claiming that her boss exposed himself and tried to stop her leaving by grabbing her hips on her very first day on the job as a receptionist. That case eventually settled before a hearing in June 2002. 2 years after that, she sued General Motor Corp, Goodyear Tire Corp, and a San Jose car dealership, alleging that a defective car had caused an accident. That one was dismissed after she fired her attorney and failed to show up in court, and it's not known if she received any money from this. Americans have a bit of a worldwide reputation for being sue happy, suing over the smallest of things, trying to get money out of people. And I think that it's people like Anna Ayala who give America that kind of name. I'm not going to pretend that I don't understand why people living in the United States are much quicker to sue than in other countries. It's a much more litigious society in general, and I covered this whole concept a lot more in depth in a previous lawsuit video I did on the McDonald's hot coffee incident, which I will leave linked down below. But in a nutshell, the USA doesn't have free healthcare. Workers' rights can be much less with fewer paid days off, less maternity leave. If you get injured and have to miss work or have to pay substantial healthcare bills, that's money coming out of your pocket, and if you want it back, you have to fight. Also, interestingly, in Britain and throughout most of Europe, the loser of a lawsuit has to pay a huge amount of the winner's legal fees, which is a huge turnoff when it comes to suing anyone. It's too much of a risk. But under the American system, each side pays their own legal fees regardless of outcome. societal differences like that I feel can get just forgotten in the stereotype, but it's actually fascinating and hopefully it will give you a bit more of an understanding as to why America has the reputation around suing that it does. In total, it was discovered that Anna had filed 13 civil actions involving herself and or her children, who were all minors at the time. And she's the kind of person that gave America the name that it has. I can't tell you that all of Anna's civil suits were without basis. She might have had a reason for each and every one, but 13 is quite a lot. On March 29th, 2005, so 1 week after the incident, the Wendy's employees that were working that day were interviewed at the company's Santa Clara headquarters. All employees denied any involvement or knowledge of the finger that was found by Anna in her chili, and they were each examined with a voice stress analyzer by a police officer trained in the equipment. Basically, a polygraph test aimed to infer deception from stress measured in the voice. The test found that all employees were truthful in regards to their statements, and each employee was cleared of any involvement. Any additional parties that were also at the restaurant at the time of the incident also claimed to have no knowledge of Anna before the events of the day, nor did they have any idea how the finger got into the chili. They were given the same voice stress test, and again, they were all found to be truthful. Imagine just being a normal person wanting to go out to treat yourself to a burger for dinner and getting tangled up in something like this. I would have been so mad. That same day, after a week of just being referred to in the media anonymously as the victim, Anna Ayala goes public in an interview with her lawyer on Good Morning America. It becomes clear that she's preparing a lawsuit against Wendy's, and that was the first time it was confirmed that that was going to be the step that she took. In the past 7 days, sales at Wendy's, particularly up and down the West Coast where this had happened, had absolutely plummeted. It makes sense, doesn't it? If you're feeling peckish and fancy a fast food treat, you're probably not going to choose to go to the place that's currently all over the media for serving a severed human finger to a customer. Most people wouldn't probably think about it too deeply, just thinking like, you know what, I'm going to go to McDonald's instead of Wendy's. But some people would choose a deliberate boycott of Wendy's. As you can imagine, because of this, their profits dropped dramatically. And the worst thing is, Wendy's were as baffled as everyone else by what had happened. From all their investigating, they couldn't find any answer as to where the finger had come from. And then the California Department of Health Services produced a report indicating that they had traced back the food products used by Wendy's, revealing no contamination or accidents at any point in the chain. It was confirmed, whatever had happened, it wasn't Wendy's fault. On day 8 after the incident, San Jose police confirmed that the finger did not come from anything internally in Wendy's, causing them to officially launch a criminal investigation. You see, from very early on here, things just weren't adding up for the investigators. Despite Anna herself and two of her relatives saying that she had vomited after spitting out the finger, officers found no vomit at the scene, and the Wendy's employees denied having cleared any up. This was a very small point, but why would they lie about such a thing? Also very early on, it was thought that the finger wasn't consistent with something that had been cooked in chili at 170 degrees for 3 hours, as was the norm with Wendy's chili preparation. After the criminal investigation was launched, an outside expert was called in to provide instructions to test whether or not the finger was indeed cooked in the chili. Turns out, it wasn't. The finger had ended up in the chili after it had been cooked, which suggests that it probably wasn't Wendy's to put it there, because there would be no benefit for them doing so. After previous questioning, it was already clear that there weren't any disgruntled employees who might have done such a thing. The only explanation was that Anna had put the finger in the chili herself, her long litigious history backing this up as something she might have done in search of compensation. In order to help with the police investigation, Wendy set up a toll-free telephone line and announced a $50,000 reward for any information about where this finger came from, with the Wendy's president, Tom Mueller, saying, "It's very important to our company to find out the truth in this incident." Over the course of 6 days, they received about 300 calls, including a call from one person who said they overheard Anna talking about the finger, and another person saying how Anna and her husband had scammed her over the sale of a mobile home. The details around this mobile home story are found in another San Jose PD statement of facts. A police officer called Albert Morales was assigned to this investigation, and he would later write in the statement that in September 2002, a woman called Bertha Davila entered into a deal to purchase a mobile home from Anna Ayala, believing at the time that Anna was the owner of the mobile home. Anna told Bertha that she was selling the mobile home because she was moving to Las Vegas, and Bertha ended up purchasing it for $11,000 cash. Anna took Bertha to a real estate agent who was to draw up documents to make the sale all legal, but Bertha was a Spanish speaker who did not speak very good English, certainly not good enough to understand all the legal language that came along with this, so Anna had to translate between the real estate agent and her. Bertha ended up signing the documents and moved into the home in October 2002 as Anna moved to Las Vegas. Only a few days later, Bertha received a phone call from a finance company saying that the mobile home was in default and she had 3 days to vacate, something that she had not been made aware of at any point. She contacted the estate agent who said that she had told Anna that she would not be able to perform the sale of the mobile home, something that Anna clearly did not translate. Bertha and her family were forced out of the home and did confront Anna, but she refused to return their money. It eventually transpired that the mobile home never even belonged to Anna and instead was owned by her live-in boyfriend. None of this was legal. Once this information came through on the tip line, the Las Vegas Police Department were forced to get involved with the investigation. And from there, they just worked away at building a case around this. By the 12th of April, it became clear to Anna that things were not going the way that she had planned. She thought this would be an easy case. Find a finger in a chili, gain a bit of media attention, sue Wendy's, get some money. But quite clearly, she didn't think her plan all the way through. Of course, the police and the health department would want to know where the finger had come from. It became clear that this was turning into a criminal investigation in which she was the main suspect, backed up by the fact on the 6th of April, the police had executed a search warrant at Anna's Las Vegas home. Speaking to the Associated Press from her front door, Anna said that the police were unnecessarily rough as they executed the search warrant, said they disrespected her and her family like terrorists, and said, "Lies, lies, lies, that's all I'm hearing. They should look at Wendy's, what are they hiding? Why are we being victimised again and again?" She said that the officers held guns to her and her daughter's heads, and she said that her daughter was thrown to the ground and injured by the officers. Amid all of this questioning over who would put the finger in the chili, there was also the question of where the finger had come from. Somebody was just wandering around one finger down and still hadn't come forward. It was baffling to investigators. There was a rumour that the finger was brought in from Mexico after an accident with a ranch hand, which prompted Mexican law enforcement to get involved and assist with gathering information, but nothing ended up coming of this. With the media attention now bearing down on Anna rather than on Wendy's, it was announced that she would be dropping her claim against them, saying that the stress and misery of being in the public spotlight just wasn't worth it. I think the point where Anna messed up was when she went public. Had she stayed anonymous, she might have just been able to stay in the shadows. She might have just been able to pull it off. Maybe. According to Wendy's corporate director of marketing, by this point, Wendy's corporation had lost an estimated $1 million a day since the incident of March 22nd. That was around $21 million. Anna's claims, along with the media onslaught, had caused individual franchises in Northern California to lose 20 to 50% of their sales. Despite this, Wendy's increased the reward for any information about the source of the finger to $100,000, determined to get to the bottom of the story. Wendy's as a whole also announced a free frosty weekend promotion to get people back into their stores, basically giving away free ice cream. By this point, Anna was being forced on the daily to deny that she had been the one to plant the finger. Public suspicion had forcefully turned on her, and the fact that she had withdrawn her complaint didn't help. She looked guilty. The investigation took a huge turn though, when the director of the Wild Animal Orphanage in San Antonio, called Carol Asbestos, called the Wendy's tip line, saying that she knew where the finger might have come from. She knew of a woman called Sandy Ullman in a town called Farump, about an hour west of Las Vegas, who had a number of large cats. Carol said that she'd been called to the property by Sandy as she needed help rescuing 6 tigers and 3 leopards, who she had inherited from her ex-boyfriend. This was on the 23rd of February 2005, and Carol said that during the visit, Sandy put her hand in one of the leopard cages, resulting in the top of her left middle finger being bitten off. This was despite the fact that seconds beforehand, Sandy had been bragging about how the cats were her babies and would never hurt her. Sandy was taken to the local hospital, but the finger couldn't be reattached, so she eventually went home, and the finger was left in the custody of the hospital. Sandy's attorney would come forward and say that the last time Sandy saw her finger was in a plastic bag in the emergency room. Sandy's attorney also said that she'd never met Anna Ayala and she never considered that it could be her finger involved in the infamous Wendy's case. The finger from the case apparently looked slightly bigger than Sandy's, but of course it could have bloated or changed when it was cooked. The attorney said it makes sense with the condition of the finger, the type of puncture wound, and the fact it wasn't cleanly severed. Sandy's finger was manicured and the police said that the chili finger was also well manicured. This whole situation is bizarre, isn't it? I can't even think about it with a straight face. I don't know if I'd be able to recognise my finger weeks after it had been chopped off, but maybe I would. How much of a connection do you have to your fingers? Anna's 18-year-old son, Guadalupe Reyes, said to the media at this point that his mother had nothing to do with Sandy Ullman and her missing finger, and that his mother wouldn't even know how to get to Farump, that she didn't even know where it was. He said there was no link between Anna and Sandy, and a spokeswoman for the hospital also said there was no record that Anna had ever been a patient there either, so she had never been to the hospital. How would she get this finger? The question over the finger was a very complex one. Once it was determined that the finger was truly a human finger, there were more intense questions that needed answering. The Santa Clara County Medical Examiner told reporters, "Once you determine it's a human finger, which we have, then you have the issue of, is it an industrial accident? Is it an unreported homicide? Where's the rest of the body, the owner of the finger? That's what we're trying to find out." One article from the San Francisco Chronicle ends on a quote from a longtime San Jose police officer saying, "My curiosity is killing me. I'm dying to find out how this is all going to turn out." As the weeks pass after the incident, it's quite interesting to see how the media's reporting of this case changed. At first it was an attack on Wendy's, then on Anna, and then it just turned into somewhat of a joke, the articles I could find getting more and more light-hearted with time. But the police did have a serious question to answer. Where had the finger come from? Were they dealing with a homicide? On the 21st of April 2005, Anna Ayala was arrested by the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, and this is where things got a bit confusing in my research. It seems that at first Anna was just arrested for grand larceny in relation to the whole mobile home fraud situation. Her husband, 43-year-old Jamie Plasencia, was also arrested a week or so later, but again not for the finger chili situation. He was arrested on a fugitive warrant at the home the couple shared. At the time, a police spokesman said, "This is her husband, but it has nothing to do with that incident. That's still an open investigation we're working on. All of these things are separate from that case." Jamie was arrested on one charge of identity theft, four charges of failure to pay child support and child abandonment, and one count of fraudulent use of official documents. The spokesman said that he utilised his children's personal information in a fraudulent manner for personal gain. In response to this, Anna and Jamie's family said that they were going to sue the San Jose police for false arrest and prosecution, with Anna's son Guadalupe telling the San Francisco Chronicle that the police were making themselves look like idiots, and all of this was going to make the lawsuit a lot bigger. With both Anna and Jamie being held in jail, investigators were still working hard on pinning down where the finger came from. If they were able to figure that out, the investigation would have a lot more to stand on, but until then, they didn't really have anything. There was no proof that Anna had planted it. But very soon, all the puzzle pieces would fall into place. In mid-May, a man called Mike Casey called the Wendy's tip line saying that he'd made an interesting connection. He was a manager at the Las Vegas-based paving slab company Lam Asphalt, the same company that Jamie Plasencia worked at, and coincidentally, they'd also had an employee who had recently lost a finger. The employee had been loading a truck when he ran into a bit of trouble. The tailgate suddenly went up and caught his hand. Despite having his gloves on, once his hand got freed, it was clear that one of his fingertips was no longer attached. It remained inside the glove when he removed his hand. Based on this tip, investigators did DNA testing and soon confirmed that the finger did indeed belong to this employee. San Jose police refused to name this man at first, but he was eventually identified as 36-year-old Brian Rossiter when his mum spoke to the San Francisco Chronicle. According to his mum, Brian was desperate for cash when he gave his finger away, having apparently owed Jamie $50 in a gambling debt. After the accident, Brian was laid up for weeks, having had reconstructive surgery on his hand. He was unable to work and his disability checks got lost in the mail, so he was pretty desperate for money. Once it was confirmed that Brian was indeed the owner of this now infamous finger, he underwent some pretty intense police questioning, with investigators trying to establish if he'd been involved in the fraud plan. The accident had actually happened in late 2004, and according to San Jose police documents, Jamie Plasencia scrubbed the debt and maybe even paid Brian $50 for the severed finger, with Jamie saying he told Brian that he intended to use the finger to create a lawsuit, but Brian denies that. Police said that Anna and Jamie offered Brian $250,000 to keep quiet about this whole situation. On the back of this new information, both Anna and Jamie were then arrested once again on charges of grand theft. Brian was never charged with anything in this case, despite Anna saying that he should have done and he knew about it all along. But now the jig was well and truly up. Both Anna and Jamie eventually confessed to the crime. On the 9th September 2005, both of them pled guilty to all of the charges against them. Grand theft, grand larceny, child support, the fraudulent documents, all of it. With the San Francisco Chronicle reporting that neither showed any emotion as they pleaded guilty. There were no plea negotiations, and it was thought at the time that there was a high probability the judge would hand over the maximum sentences at their sentencing, which was supposed to be in the November but was delayed until January 2006. At the sentencing, Judge Edward Davila handed down a 9-year sentence to now 40-year-old Anna Ayala, and 44-year-old Jamie Plasencia received a 12-year, 4-month sentence. His being longer because of all the extra charges he was facing, I can only assume. The judge also ordered that the couple pay $21.2 million in restitution to Wendy's, as well as nearly $500,000 to JEM Management, who owned the franchise where all this happened, and $170,000 to the Wendy's employees who had lost out on wages because of this whole thing. The judge said, "Greed and avarice overtook this couple to the point where they lost their moral compass." This amount came as a bit of a shock to everyone, including to Wendy's, who said that they'd just intended to seek the $170,000 to cover the loss of wages for employees at the San Jose restaurant, recognising that Anna and Jamie simply didn't have $21 million to pay back. But it seems that the judge wanted to make a point that this was a crime that had a massive effect on everyone involved, and to deter anyone who was considering trying something similar. Once in prison in 2007, Anna did appeal to get her sentence reduced, and she ultimately won. In the January of that year, the US Supreme Court had ruled that California's sentencing law violated the right to a jury trial because it allowed judges to add years to a prison term based on facts that never came before a jury. And it turned out that Anna's case fell underneath this kind of loophole. The judge had decided to impose an extra 5 years on her sentence for aggravated circumstances based on his own fact-finding and not on the jury's conclusion. As a result, Anna's sentence got shortened by 2 years, but it didn't matter anyway because she would be released in 2009 for good behaviour. I couldn't find any information about when Jamie was released, but he would have been by now anyway. You would think that after this, Anna would keep her head down, but in 2012, she hit the headlines once again when she was found to have committed fraud once more. Her son, Guadalupe, who was now a grown man, shot himself in the ankle accidentally. He was out on parole at this time and therefore was absolutely not allowed to be in possession of a gun. Anna lied for him, saying that she'd seen two men shoot him, but Guadalupe quickly cracked under questioning and admitted the fact he had lied. He ended up being charged and sentenced to 2 years for the exact thing he was trying to avoid, felon in possession of a firearm, and Anna had to plead no contest to 3 felony charges, receiving a further 2-year prison term.
I feel like this situation was a lot more understandable than the first. She still shouldn't have lied, but a mother trying to protect her son, whether right or wrong, is more understandable than just trying to dupe a company out of money. Anna would have been released from this by 2015, and she's managed to stay out of headlines since then. I've got to admit, I do think you're either very brave or very stupid to think you'd be able to pull off a scam like the Wendy's one that Anna tried. Of course the police are going to question where a human finger came from, and they're going to follow it through to the end. I think Anna and Jamie's fatal flaw in their plan was thinking that the police probably wouldn't care all that much about the finger, and of course there was never going to be any other viable explanation as to where it had come from. Like, it was going to be very obvious from just a quick investigation that this finger hadn't come from the supply chain and somebody else must have put it there. I suppose I'm just thankful they did this to a Wendy's, which could afford a hit like this, and not to a smaller, locally owned business. But then again, I suppose that was the point, to scam a big chain out of money that they knew could afford it. I'm sure there's a whole point or a narrative I could make about capitalism here, and maybe Anna did the right thing, but I'm not going to delve into that. I think Anna just proves that scams like this are not worth it. It's not worth the stress and the microscope your life is put under. Had it worked out, she probably would have become a millionaire, but I don't think it ever was going to. This reminds me of that Friends episode where Phoebe found a thumb in her soda can, but she refused to take the money for it. Anna was kind of like the opposite of that situation. I'm sure there are many scams like this that have played out over the last few decades and nobody's ever been caught because they thought about it beginning to end. They thought about every single part of it. And you know what? If you've done that, maybe you deserve the money. I don't think Anna or Jamie in this case deserve the money. They were always going to be questioned as to where the finger had come from. That was like the biggest thing here. Thank you so much for watching this video. If you enjoyed it, then please let me know in the comments down below. Do you know of any other cases like this one I can explore? And I will see you in the next one. Bye guys.